psychological impact. People don't feel as ready to do things, and I think at some point it might even be possible that our board might be more cautious in approving grants, certainly for special items, if they feel that the portfolio is sinking, continues to sink.
Mm-hmm. But I'd be interested in the human interest side of it. I mean, how it hit around here, and who called whom. Was there much? There must have been some good deal of
phoning. I think the most interesting answer to that is how little of that there really was. Mm-hmm. The day after the 500-point drop, I was absolutely astounded that I only had one call. That was from a quite elderly trustee, and in fact, he was looking for names of stocks that he should be buying. But there is no one, even to this date, who has called me expressing alarm in any way, or saying that we ought to change course. We've held three conference calls with the investment committee in the weeks since that event, and we're going to have an investment committee meeting next week. But the consensus that's emerged from that is to hold steady on the course, that there's been no inclination certainly to sell, not to greatly accelerate buying either, but to be cautious. And the only real view that was offered at all was to be a little more conservative in the kinds of stocks that we looked at or bought. But I think Wharf is probably the ultimate example of an institution that has the structure to weather this kind of a market. And
you mean it's widely enough dispersed?
It's diversified, but also, frankly, unlike, say, a trust department in a bank, where a lot of nervous clients come in and need their hands held, and in many cases demand that sort of emotional actions be carried on. Mm-hmm. We just don't have that, and that's probably also a blessing that comes with the kind of board we have, in that they've been through difficult markets before, and we have plenty of cash, plenty of liquidity, so that we could sustain the grant, which is our only real liability, for a number of years, even without more income. Mm-hmm. And as I said, the income continues to accrue, and in fact probably will come in slightly above what we budgeted last spring. Mm. So it's again no different than an individual owning a house. If someone says the market value of that is up or down, that may make them feel differently. But as long as they're not contemplating moving, mm-hmm. it doesn't have any real impact on them. The house continues to provide the service of shelter that it always has. And in that sense, the portfolio is doing the same thing. It's continuing to provide the income. But a lot of people don't look at it that way, and institutional investment has increasingly come to measuring their results both in terms of income and change in market value, and therefore by those measures, which we use as well, everybody looks very bad, and in that measure, Wharf portfolio was badly run.
Expected conferences in the corridors and...
Well, certainly no one's happy about it, and it is depressing, but it's even possible that at the end of, say, this quarter, the market, if it were up substantially, this number would never even really appear. You issue quarterly statements, and something that happened in the middle of October is of no more consequence than something that happened last April or some other interim date. And we still go back to the fact that if you look at the calendar year, market's about where it was at the beginning of the year.
Mm-hmm. Yes,
so it, it's not been a good year, but the preceding ones had been unsustainably good. And to have a, call it break even year, is not exactly a disaster.
Did people from campus call up?
No, even not one call that I've received from anybody on campus.
Well, so much for that.
Yes. Well, and that to their credit, too. And yeah. I think probably that reflects some feeling that, that if there's a problem, it's our problem, and that they really don't expect there to be one.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't either when the time to approve the grant comes along next year. I don't see how this is going to have any very significant impact.
Okay, well, we'll get back to my ordinary questions then. We got most of the way through last time, but hadn't dealt with the your dealings with the university very much. One thing I want to ask you is your comment that WARF grants were intermingled with other research grants. When did this begin, and why, and what's the effect?
Yes, you're going to need to refresh my memory in the sense that we use that word intermingle.
Well,
I think the WARF grants are always identified as coming from WARF, but I think there have been times when some of the recipients have not at least clearly understood that.
That's what I understood, that people didn't know their money was from WARF.
Yeah, and I think that's probably only a matter of communication, how they're notified or how careful they are to try to understand the sources.
Mm.
But it is also certainly true that we encounter a lot of people in a variety of parts of the university who recognize WARF as a source of funding that they've enjoyed. So it just, I may have misstated it or stated it too strongly last time. I think it's just kind of a mixed bag. Some people, surprisingly, at some levels, don't understand it, and others do.
But so that's not a major source of distress or something that
it's not a major source, but it is something that I think all of us feel ought to be worked on to be sure that. People, particularly people on the campus who might be in a position in the future to bring invention disclosures to WARF, that those people be quite clear that they've been a beneficiary of the system, and that they might potentially be able to put something back into the system.
Well, now, is this Bob Bach's fault?
I suspect that most of the problem is in the way in which the grant is administered. I don't want to say it's Bob's fault, but I think he's accustomed to dealing with war funds up there in a particular way, and I think he knows it so well that he probably doesn't always realize that others don't know it.
Mm.
And certainly we did find 2 years ago now that there were a number of even department chairmen who didn't know it. So it's not an imaginary issue at all. It's not just the brand new assistant professor.
Well, what are your relations with him? I know there was there's a bit of correspondence in the files, I think in 1981. It was when you were setting up something special for biochemistry, the faculty retention fund.
Yes. Yes.
And you said the money should come out of the grant for the year, and they said that's not what we understood. Do you remember that?
Yes. I think sometimes there's a concern here that WARF and its funds are taken a little too much for granted, and that commitments can be made not just by the graduate school, but by some of the other deans as well. Commitments can be made on behalf of WARF almost without consultation. The episode you referred to, from our point of view, was a matter of where that campus line was, that we saw the allocation of funds as an internal matter to the university, and in that sense was part of the grant. And if there were more funds needed, the grant itself should be increased rather than directing it specifically the way I think it was for first proposed.
Well, how did that get solved? That's all. The solution doesn't appear.
Well, I think the solution is there were two episodes, and there may have been some difference in the way in which those two were handled. But from my point of view, it was handled to our satisfaction in that the university accepted that the departmental grants were to be incorporated in the basic request that's approved in the spring. Mm-hmm. And in fact, the mechanics are now such that it's totally circular. They come to us the inventor's share of royalties, for example, and ask what that figure is, and then just include it in the grant so that the effect is satisfied both people.
So it's an administrative matter,
yes.
Than just who handles it.
That's right. Mm.
Who set that special biochemistry arrangement? Whose idea was it?
I suspect that it began with Hector DeLuca, but I think it came to us from Irv Sheen. Mm. And it was clearly predicated on the concerns of losing faculty. And the biochemistry department was especially vulnerable. And that something was needed to supplement resources in the department. And it really was a precursor of a broader program that I think we put in place a year or so later, which was called the Faculty Enhancement Grant, and that has now produced, I believe it's eight. I think the title is Senior Wharf Research Professorship.
Not just biochemistry.
No, broadly across the university. And these were intended to reward absolutely top grade scientists who were close to retirement, give them the status and the financial support that the professorships provided, and at the same time free departmental funds to bring in the next generation of young people.
So you're glad to see something like that, presumably, but you don't think it up. It comes from the campus.
Well, that was an example, I'd say, of a joint effort. Mm-hmm. There was concern expressed. I think the very beginning of it was expressed at the Wharf site among the trustees, mm-hmm. that they knew enough about the situation with faculty recruitment and salaries here, that they thought that there ought to be something different done to correct this, and or not correct it, obviously, just to alleviate it a bit, and then the pattern, the suggested mechanism, was requested by the university. In the biochemistry department, that's less clear. That probably, as I say, began with DeLuca. But Irv, with his regular, Shane, with his regular appearances at the Wharf Board, was always seeding that kind of concern, talking about the budget problems, talking about recruitment, and particularly loss of key faculty members, and the efforts that he got involved in trying to keep selected scientists. So this was one way in which, again, the flexibility that Wharf has could be utilized to have an impact on a small number of people, but probably a big impact on the whole campus. Mm-hmm.
I don't know whether this is. The question is, could you describe a typical presentation by the university of its annual grant request?
Well, the presentation is structured around a fairly standard letter signed by either the grad dean or chancellor, or sometimes both, setting out several categories of requests, the largest of which is almost nondescript. I mean, it just says grant request to be allocated by the research committee. And that might be, say, $7 million out of an $11 million total. And the details of that, that's, say, in the spring that that's acted on. The research committee doesn't give us a report on how that money is spent until long after the fact. So that it's just a reliance on the system to produce the kind of spending that is detailed every year in that statistical summary at the back of the Red Book.
So it isn't, I thought it was the chancellor coming down to the board meeting.
The letter precedes that, and then it goes down and details a number of special projects. Mm-hmm. And they could be $25,000 professorships, whatever. Gives a total, and that letter is bound in the agenda for that meeting. Then both the dean and the chancellor come in and discuss the letter and any questions, the normal kind of follow-up on a written request. But the letter itself and really the discussion of the items in that letter, typically that's quite short. Most of the focus is on the special items or problems that presumably will be the subject of a future request.
So I had a quote from Bill Sewell, which is back in 1967-68, about disgruntlement of the board when money was going to fund research in the Dead Sea. Does that simply not happen anymore because you don't get that much detail?
The Red Book provides that long after the fact. And there certainly are trustees who from time to time question uses in the humanities or the arts. Mm-hmm. And they are not entirely convinced that this fits their definition of research. But the broad-based spending of the grant funds is pretty well accepted, and there have been no motions, that degree of formality, attempting to change it since I've been on board. There certainly have been discussions and some pretty hard questioning of, say, Irv Sheen, but in a variety of ways, he's been able to at least mollify the people who've been concerned about it, and inevitably, it always comes back to this matter of how far Worf ought to or feels it wants to go in terms of managing the details of the spending. The result has been typically that they don't want to go very far. Leave it to the university authorities.
Can you remember any examples of things they question?
Specific projects. The ones that I just cited are the only as close to specific as I could be. There is doubt that paying grants to people in the arts to either perform or to paint or sculpt or do their artistic endeavors, that's an appropriate use of Worf funds or qualifies as research.
So somebody always raises that and then somebody else says, oh, keep still.
The usual university response, the basic university response, is that by that more of the money allocated by the research committee, more goes to the natural sciences than is granted by WARF. Therefore, in that sense, all of WARF funds can be construed as going to even the natural sciences.
Oh, yes.
And that what really is happening is by supporting the research in the natural sciences, it allows the other sources to support the arts, humanities.
Yeah, I've heard that.
And that's been the ultimate answer that the university has offered.
Mm-hmm.
So it's always this, it's back to this question of how well mixed funds are. What goes in to the system doesn't come out in the same form.
It's just, I picture one or two board members. I don't suppose it's many more than that. Or is it
One of the leading doubters on this whole issue has now died, and that was Bernie Motz.
Uh-huh.
Bernie consistently disagreed with the policy and from time to time brought it up. The most recent was probably 3 or 4 years ago, not too long before he died. And again, the university came in with a list of the way they saw the allocation of funds, which basically could be used to say that all the WARF funds went to the natural sciences.
It was somewhat different
than what's in the Red Book.
Yeah. But the other board members would know this was coming and they'd expect it, and then they'd say, Yeah.
And that doesn't mean that they entirely buy the answer, but they're willing to accept it.
Do you have much to do with the Mrs. Steenbuck and the Steenbuck Fund?
That's come to be more almost just a formality.
Hmm.
We manage the fund, and we make income available, but we make it, and the board officially has to approve it, which we do each year, but there's never a question raised, and whatever Mrs. Steenbuck requests, that request is honored, and she's done a variety of things, but I think she's usually done them at the suggestion of Professor DeLuca.
Mm-hmm. She was concerned about how the neural surgeon would be selected.
There was a fairly tough procedure established for filling those professorships, and I know Hector has talked to me about his concerns that those precise mechanisms weren't always being found.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that you probably have seen the letter.
Yeah, getting an out. She wanted an outside committee to decide.
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
To make sure that these were prominent people who were recognized by outsiders rather than any kind of a inside track for people.
But
we've inquired. Because it's up to us to be sure that the university carries out her wishes. And we have inquired of them and have received assurances that indeed they are doing what was specified. And we've accepted that. I mean, we haven't gone over and audited the minutes of the committee that made the selection, but rely on their agreement that this was a procedure that would work and that they were using it.
Do you talk to, does Hector DeLuca, I mean, would you talk to him about something like that? Would you say, look, are they really choosing this man in the right way? Or?
It really came the other way. Again, for some reason, and I don't know why it came to his attention, but he called me saying he was unhappy that they were taking some shortcuts.
This would be the medical school, presumably.
Yeah, I think.
Mm.
And I suspect it was Bob Bach as well. That he's typically involved in those, that kind of appointment. Mm-hmm. And probably the chancellor.
What about the story on the nutrition chair?
That one is unusual in the sense that it was a trustee idea, almost plain and simple, and that it be done in a particular way. The prime mover on that was Bill Beers, who at the time the idea surfaced was chairman of the Kraft Food Company. And at Kraft, he'd seen the funding of some other nutrition-related academic programs.
In other universities.
Other universities. Mm-hmm. And he felt very strongly that the university, that medical school training in nutrition was weak, almost non-existent. That nutrition was regarded as something for agriculture or home ec or something, but not for physicians. And that it was important to get this training into the medical school curriculum. For reasons that were never made entirely clear to us, that concept seemed to be very difficult to sell, or at least to execute here at Wisconsin. But Bill is a very determined person. And the university came up with some programs that they thought were close enough, and Worf wouldn't agree to. By being unwilling to agree to these alternate or substitute programs, it meant that the program as Worf wanted it just didn't get going. And whether it was the medical school or the graduate school or the chancellor or who all was involved in trying to divert Worf's money and attention to similar, but not quite the thing we wanted, similar programs, I'm not sure, but the result was a standoff for a number of years. Until finally, in a conversation with Shane, Bill Beers brought this up again and said, "You've missed the boat. Other schools are doing this. Nutrition is increasingly important in medical education. We made this proposal to you before. Maybe we can renew it if you would do it right." And Irv very promptly at that point agreed to do it right and got it started. Just as it was one of those things he did in the closing days of his position as chancellor. And the trustees were sufficiently skeptical that Dean Brown from the medical school was invited to the spring meeting and asked to explain how this was going to be implemented, the kind of person he had in mind, where it would fit into the medical school and its curriculum before it was officially approved, which finally did happen last spring.
And it was being done.
Well, it is, they're searching right now for the person. At least I'm not aware that a selection has been made. Mm-hmm. But before Worf gave the approval, it wanted to be certain that it was done, let's say, our way and not one of the ways that had been proposed earlier.
Now how did Dean Brown react to this?
This was his first encounter with the Worf board, and he seemed perfectly agreeable to what had been set forth as our expectations. And they were clear at that point. So there, at the meeting, there's, in my presence, there's never been any problem in accepting what was intended.
But they want to have a course in nutrition incorporated into the medical curriculum. That is quite a change, isn't it? That's
right. And to have a prominent...
what do you think that is?
Water.
Oh.
It's a freezer that's filling. They wanted a prominent, well-respected medical man who had an interest in nutrition to help to build this whole issue of the relationship between nutrition, health, and disease into the medical curriculum and not just have it a elective afterthought.
Mm-hmm. I wonder what, I mean, there is a department of nutrition, isn't there? What is it called?
It's not in the medical school.
No, it isn't. It is in the ag school.
That's
well,
right.
How do they react to this?
Well, I don't know how they react to it, but the focus here all the way along had been to improve the nutritional understanding that young doctors took out. Mm-hmm. And the belief at Wharf, at least, and I don't think really was any criticism from university, was that the present arrangement wasn't doing it, that it was more related maybe to the food industry or food service kinds of businesses rather than the medical side.
Did you ever talk directly to Bob Bach about this?
Wharf did. It was not one-on-one that I ever remember, but there were some quite pointed conversations with him and a few of the trustees, and usually Bill Beers was involved.
You mean several board members had him come over to talk?
Were here for a committee or some other reason, uh-huh, and would invite Bach over.
Yeah.
I remember one in particular was in my office, and it got quite heated.
And they just simply had a pretty specific idea of how this ought to be done. And when Bob didn't agree to the details, or apparently couldn't deliver the details that they had in mind, then they simply said, we'll withdraw the offer.
But that's what he wanted, wasn't it? I mean, did he want to have the chair?
He wanted it done in a variety of other ways.
Mm, but he did want it done in those ways.
In his ways, not the trustees' ways. His way differed.
But he did have a notion of doing something with nutrition.
Yes. In fact, it illustrates one of the concerns that has surfaced at Wharf on a number of occasions, and I think we're all more concerned about for the future than we've been in the past. And that is that somebody at Wharf has a suggestion that a project be done in an area. And that general suggestion with X dollars of funding is readily accepted. But then the mechanism gets changed. And if it remains under the general heading of, say, nutrition, that's enough, even though it gets diverted into graduate fellowships or a whole host of other ways in which that money might be used. And most of us here have taken exception to that kind of thing, that there is so little asked of the university by Wharf in any specific funding, that those few specifics ought to be honored. I don't know if we talked about the Slichter professorship, but there's another bone of contention that was, frankly, not worth the antagonism that it built up. But the whole purpose was to honor Don Slichter with two chairs that were to be funded at a level that made them important, prestigious, and respected. And for reasons that have never been made clear to us, and we've made some effort to find out, instead of doing, that was done in engineering, chemical engineering, and there's never been a word said, everything's been fine. But in the business school, for some reason, that chair was split in two. And in our mind, diluted to the point where the whole purpose that we had in mind was changed, was not accomplished. Mm-hmm. And I'm confident that if anything like that is done again, as we're planning right now to do in memory of Stan Rui, who was one of the wharf presidents who recently died, we'll be much more precise in specifying that it be done in a certain way so that it doesn't end up somehow being diverted into some need that arises after the funds are available. They aren't big dollar amounts, but they're the kind of things that are separate lines in that request we talked about, and which therefore, because they're named for their friends, are things that are important to the trustees. And they say, out of $11 million, can't $50,000 be used the way we think it should be, rather than have it split up or other things done to it? And so I think we're going to be increasingly alert to the mechanics of how some of these special grants get funded.
But you said you tried to find out why it wasn't done in the business school.
Okay. The reason it was split? I guess I don't know. I have some, they'd be just speculations on my part, but it was some negotiation between the business school and the graduate school that administered this chair, or the funding that we had intended for a chair.
So that's the graduate school again?
In my opinion, yes.
Someone used the expression that Bach dragged his heels when there was any appearance of Wharf meddling in university affairs. Is that your feeling?
I don't know about dragging his heels. He clearly resists it in any way he can. No question about that. And that's understandable. He gets an almost blank check from us. And I guess he just prefers to have it totally blank. But in the case of this Slichter chair, the unwillingness to make that small compromise, I think, was counterproductive, even though whatever problem they were dealing with, I trust, was benefited by the way he chose to split this up, if he's the one that did it or whoever did it. But the net result was strongly negative in how it was received here.
Yes, I can imagine.
And still well remembered. I mean, that's a number of years ago. But anytime there's a discussion of this kind of general question, the Slichter professorship surfaces. So he may have won a skirmish and lost a battle.
Anything else of that sort?
Those are the two outstanding examples. There have been some problems, and again, I'm a little unclear on where those came about with another much beloved trustees memorial program, the Ralph Johnson program in the business school. That now seems to be on a good track. But it took a number of years for it to get going, and I know at one point that Bach was going to try to hold it up and try to use it as a fundraising device, saying Wharf's put up X dollars, but business school has to go out and raise another X before we'll release it, that kind of thing. And again, that got a little murky in the relations between the two deans and the two really colleges. And all I can say is that one seems to be in good shape now, and we're pleased with the way that's developed.
What about the history, the whole question of the Wharf history? Somebody wanted to do a biography of Steenbach. guess it was Howard Schneider was going to do it, and I guess must have been Ross wanted a biography of Lincoln. And then there was the committee that Vancina was on it to have a history of war. These were all before your time, I suppose. And
well, in a sense, that booklet of E.V. Fred's was it in 73, I think that was a history, or at least a bit of a report.
But not really a history.
Not really a history. The idea of going to a full-blown history a couple years ago, I think was again a couple of trustees who, first of all, have been around a long time and have a deep attachment both to Wharf and to the university, and thought that there were a number of elements here that ought to be known. But the idea of publishing it, and going public with it, was controversial from the very beginning. And I think even Clay Schoenfeld would admit that it was a questionable call on whether it would finally be published or not. But there was a full consensus that it was worthwhile having somebody spend the time to pull it all together so that we at least had a document in our files that told the full story. And the question of publication kept being postponed and postponed as the chapters came along, and was never, as recently as a month ago, we had a meeting on a completely different subject. I was just doing the notes, the minutes on that, but my notes show that Walter Frauchi brought the issue up again. He's not satisfied, and never will be, that with the decision to not publish. And I'm sure Bill Kellett, who you expect to talk with, will say the same thing. And there may be one or two others, but the strong consensus is that Wharf is an organization that does not seek publicity. That we're best, our purpose is best served by a low profile, going about our business and not asking for public recognition. And it's ironic that we talk about this today, because it's my understanding that probably this afternoon there's a press conference up in the governor's office, which I declined to attend. And a number of people will be up there claiming credit for their wisdom and imagination and foresight, and whatever else they have, for the Project Phoenix hearing aid, which is going to be publicly announced. And they're hoping for a big splash, and the company, Nicolet, sees this as a way of starting the marketing and so forth. But I opted not even to attend this.
Because you didn't want Wharf's role to be...
Wharf's role is known, and it'll be mentioned. The press release I saw, it just mentions that there was funding for Wharf. But the view is that if it does succeed and does produce significant income for us, we've accomplished what we wanted. We have no need to advertise Wharf, and the people who are going to advertise the hearing aid can go ahead and do that without us. So there isn't any need for Wharf as an entity to be identified with this. And we're not, say, in the venture capital business, and by appearing at something like that, we probably would get a dozen inquiries from people who we really would have no likely interest in dealing with. So for a lot of reasons, it's just simpler to stay out of it. And that's quite similar to the decision on the history, that there inevitably are things that can be criticized. And this would introduce a whole new pile of ammunition to people who, academic papers or newspaper criticism or whatever, would be able to now at some basis take the same old shots at Worf. And then we're back in the business of trying to answer all of these things, much as we'd be answering to the inventors who've just invented a magic safety pin or something that they want us to finance, as we did the hearing aid. So this is a consistent low profile for Worf as an entity, and saying that our purpose is to help the university and the individuals in the university who benefit from it. And I very much hope that the news that comes out of that press conference today shows Kurt Hecox with a halo around his head, because he's the young man who conceived this idea. He's the man who's been working with people with hearing disorders, and he's the one that's been working the long hours at bringing this idea into the reality.
He's a faculty member.
And he's a faculty member.
And I don't,
as long as we're on the record here, I guess I should also say, and there's a superb young engineer out at Nicolet named George Kaya, and those two have worked together beautifully as a team with the innovator and the production man, and they're the guys that ought to be getting the accolades, because we helped to give them the resources that they needed, but they're the ones that have done it.
Mm-hmm.
And that, using those same words, we're trying to give the university the resources so the people there can do it.
So you approve of this policy?
I approve of the policy of low profile, and I approve of the policy of not publishing the history.
Mm-hmm. What the board members all read the history yet?
Each board member got a copy.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Not necessarily read it, I
not
suppose.
Right.
Were there comments on it? On its
some of them, in fact, and Clay Shainfeld is a marvel of keeping his ego out of it. He's willing to accept comment, criticism in the most constructive sense. Some of them got right down to redoing phrasing and saying that these events occurred in a different way and you ought to rewrite it this way. Others acted as if they hadn't read it. I mean, just never said much of anything. So the response varied. But they took a quite active interest in it. And a lot of people said they personally benefited from it. In other words, things that occurred before my stay as a board member.
So they thought it was a good history, did they?
Yes, I think by and large they felt it was a good history. In the popular sense, I mean, I don't think anybody would characterize it as an academic study.
Mm-hmm.
And the decision to publish it in no way reflects any dissatisfaction either with the work or with Clay Shainfeld.
Mm-hmm.
But to the contrary, everybody's very pleased.
Well, you mentioned the State House. How often does the legislature want to look into Worf, and when do they do it, and what do they do?
That again was an issue at the time of the publication. There was a proposal that arose from Crazy Legs and his famous boat and sides of beef and all the rest of the things that he was getting in the press about, that led Representative Schneider to include in a budget and got it through one house of the legislature, which would have subjected Worf, the UW Foundation, and any other organization related to or supporting state body. Any such organization would be subjected to the open meeting law and audit by the state auditor. I genuinely believe that Worf, as it has operated for 62 years, could not function in that environment. The simplest case to point out is that no company is going to come to Worf and say, we're interested in this kind of technology, knowing that any of their competitors could have immediate access to the fact that this area was something that they were exploring or that they were considering a process or a drug or whatever it was. It just would be a commercial impossibility. If new product development isn't the most sensitive area that companies have, I would like to hear what is.
Let alone board meetings discussing investment.
Right, yes.
Yeah. So, but that was quashed.
Well, that's...
Schneider seems to have tried his best to shift.
It's not gone yet, though. The auditor is quite diligent in surfacing it in one forum or another. And there was another proposal just this past spring, which again just kind of disappeared. And there were some questions about its legality and its the way it was going to be implemented. But it was coming out of a different committee, it was the Joint Committee on Audit in that instance. And we followed it for a while, and then, as I say, it's disappeared, but we have no reason to think it won't reappear again sometime. It just seems to be a fundamental contradiction. The attitude that I just expressed is a contradiction to the philosophy in the state government that everything has to be made public, and they just are insensitive to the consequences.
So you'd have to send lobbyists down there to talk to
Well, we don't have a lobbyist, never have. We have thought about it, but so far we've relied on banding together with other affected organizations. The Alumni Association, for instance, was very helpful in turning out their members from a variety of districts. You can call that grassroots or citizen lobbying, not professional lobbying. But again, we don't even have a constituency. There isn't much we are able to do.
Well, the university, I suppose.
Well, and the university, that's true. And the university's people themselves are on record, but they're characterized by the legislature,
yes.
and so that loses something. They've been the first line on this, no question. But it takes a lot of curious forms. For instance, even groups like the Friends of Channel 21 would have been brought into this because they, too, are a support organization for a state agency.
You mean they would have been had to be audited and have
yes.
meetings?
Yes, so they would have been in the same position Wharf would have been in. And there are a surprising number of those organizations supporting all the state stations, radio and TV, all the other campuses of the university, and even organizations like the DNR have some support foundations. So once the word was spread and people started realizing what was going on, there was more of a group out there than you'd expect at first blush.